Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Heartbeat, we are all one. And at these turbulent times, it's important to know this oneness, that in the body of life, every part of that body is sacred, and everyone is our family. The family, the human family, the family of the planet, the one planetary family. And so we are called to a higher order of being at this time, where we see things not from the self-interest of the individual, but we see our interconnectedness, our relational role with the planet, with the environment, with the trees and the plants and the animals, that we're all interconnected, and what happens to one of us happens to all of us. So this Sunday morning, we open our hearts and create that spacious operating center where something within us can meet what arises, not with the need to fix it or change it or manipulate it or somehow make it other than what it is. And in that radical acceptance of life just as it is, we then find a calmness and a clarity. We find compassion and an abiding curiosity. How might I be that space, that holding space, to serve at a greater level? Through deep listening, we discover what is unique to us. And then we do small acts with great love, because there are no really great acts. And in doing those little things with great love, we serve the one in the many, and the many in the one. So with cheerful expectancy, we allow this day to unfold in the mystery of belonging to the universe. A universe that truly is mysterious. We can't understand it. We can't really even know what the future will bring. And yet, in that uncertainty, there is a calmness and a clarity that arises. So with gratitude in advance, we take the next step, knowing that we will be guided from within and assisted by all of our many wonderful friends in the one family of life. Say with me, in virtual land, and so it is. So thank you for being here at home. And I'm here with Michael, my sound guy. He's in the back waving at me. And beloved Bertram, he came in today. He had a tough night last night, you know. We had thunderstorms around 2 a.m. And he freaked out as the lightning and then the thunder. He just shook like a leaf. And just like I said in that opening treatment, I couldn't fix it. I couldn't change the circumstances. But I could be a holding space for him. So between Trey and myself, he lay between us, and he shook and he panted for a good half an hour to an hour, and then he finally went to sleep. So he's a little exhausted this Sunday morning, so he probably won't be speaking with you. Yesterday, in my quest to find a deep sense of what to share with you, I went online, and there's so much you can listen to, and I found myself doing an hour and a half live streaming with Jon Kabat-Zinn. It's on the Wisdom Channel. It was 2 days ago. And he had 22,000 visitors from 120 countries, all tuned in to hear what he had to say. Now, Jon Kabat-Zinn, for those of you who don't know, he created the mindfulness training in the University of Massachusetts in Boston, and they teach MBSF, mindfulness bonds for stress relief, mindfulness-based stress release, right? And they use it in hospitals for people who are on the front line. And he was sharing with us in the world that this is the place we need to be, because these are really trying times. And when there is dis-ease on the outside, it can create dis-ease on the inside. And so when we have mindfulness-based stress relief, then when there is that stress there, he said, we operate in the now moment by learning to meditate. And he would recommend, as he does, and we went for a 20-minute meditation at the beginning of his Zoom experience. Imagine 22,000 people on Zoom. Oh, by the way, this Wednesday, I'm going to attempt to do a class on Zoom. I have Jody Rutenberg, who's going to help me. And if you're interested in doing that, you can email her at jody.rutenberg@yahoo.com or Facebook her, and she'll put you on the invite list. And we're doing it Wednesday morning at 10. And we're going to be studying the book, The Joy of True Meditation by Jeff Foster. And I'll share with you a little bit about that later. But the reason I chose that is because the whole premise is to meet life as it arises and to find a way to respond. And so that's really where we are at the stage in life. It's not about finding the right way or the wrong way. There is no right or wrong way. Even Jon Kabat-Zinn said, there's the way that's applicable for you. And each one of us gets to discover that. He said, in these uncertain times, we can't find one answer that fits all, but we can go within and discover what works for the individual, what works for me. And so when Trey and I were on our beginning of our spiritual path, we've been 45 years together, so this was maybe 40 years ago, we were at the Georgia Conservancy where we've always been environmentally conscious. And it was about preserving the environment in Georgia where we lived at the time. And there was this man from the mountains of North Carolina, and he said what's true for him, and this rang true for us at the time, was he said, I create my own island of decency. I realize I can't change the world, but I can create my island of decency right where I live. And so that's what I mean by finding something that works for you. And so when I come to the center, this is an island of decency for me. I found myself walking around the grounds and noticing the little seedlings that are coming up. Some zinnias from last year are coming up. Some sunflowers in the boxes are rising. I put some nasturtiums back there by the shed. And there's a sycamore tree that has planted herself by the back door in the cement, and she is starting to bud out. And the pine tree that planted herself in the old cement container is starting to shoot up candles. So life springs eternal, and sometimes we get to notice where we put our attention. And, you know, even Jon Kabat-Zinn said, as important as our attention is, he said the attending is more important than the attention. Because sometimes we say, okay, I've got to put my attention on the positive and not on the negative, put my attention on faith and not on fear. But he said, in the attending, then you're in the living moment where we're constantly living in the now. He says that beautiful, timeless reality that we call now. So could we explore this mystery of belonging to the universe in a way that is intimate for us? So it doesn't matter what David might say to you. It matters what really awakens in you for you to find that way that's relevant at this time in life. So let me see. I'm speaking this month on the mystery, living in the mystery. And the first week I talked about God's chance. And I brought you my little book called The Gardener, where the gardener found himself listening to the silence, which Eckhart Tolle calls the language of God. And he says everything else is a poor translation. So could we listen to God's chants that paradoxically are oftentimes silent? And could we court the silence? Now, most of us, if not all of us, are in forced isolation. And, you know, being a minister for over 30 years, I have spent a fortune going on retreats where I got to be in isolation and we were living in forced silence. Well, now you get a free retreat because you don't have to go somewhere to do it. and you can experience your own inner silence, or maybe not. And the beautiful thing is, when the mind is all chaotic and confused, there is that silence which is everywhere permeating. Now, you know this little dog at my feet. He's not worried about the COVID-19. He's not worried about, should he run up to Michael when Michael walks in the room? Does he need to keep his social distance?
He just goes on up and he bumps his head into your hips and, you know, he says, this is what I do. And the two-leggeds are a little afraid, but I'm not afraid. And
so it's nice to kind of take communion with your animal because they live in a world, an alternative reality that isn't fear-based. I pulled out Ernest Holmes this morning. Living the Science of Mind. I've taught this so many times, and it's like 500 pages. I would never teach this again. But I went to the back of the book where he talked about fear. And in the religious science way, they're very strong in quoting scripture, perfect love casts out all fear. And so much of what he talks about is casting out the fear. But at the end of the book, he talked about the contagion of fear. And we see this happening on the planet, how people get contagioned by the fear. You just turn the news on and it can scare the bejeebies out of you. And so he said in this lovely essay, the first thing when fear arises and you've been contagioned by the fear on the outside, he said, observe that fear and acknowledge where it's coming from. There's usually a part of our emotional body, oh my God, what happens if such and such? And there's a narrative that follows. And he says, once you notice the origins of that fear and you dialogue with it, then you can notice that that arose in the silence, in that spacious part of you that knows nothing of the fear. And so ironically, there's fear arising from the local mind and from the news media and from all the pundits. And then there's that piece that observes it. And just that simple detached awareness of it helps you take dominion. Am I going to choose to get into the boat of fear, or am I going to say, ah, there's that little boat of fear moving through consciousness yet again, yet again? And when you've lived as long as I have, there's the opportunity to move into fear. Our beloved Glory G, last Sunday, she had a stroke. And I'm happy to share with all of you out there, she's home now. She's recovering, she's walking, she's speaking, and I just know that her recovery is imminent. She has a very loving family and a loving community that have been praying for her and hold her in the light. So during that time, there was a lot of fear that arose a week ago. Oh my God, oh my God. But then with prayer and with faith and with the amazing capacity of our medical science, she's doing really well. And so life will give you these opportunities to observe the fear and also to observe, how am I meeting that fear? So God's chants are everywhere. Listen to them. Then the second week I talked about, the gift in receiving, and how, like you out there in virtual land, get to explore how are you able to receive the message today at a deep level that may be relevant for you. And I love this little idea that's been working on me ever since I gave that talk 3 weeks ago. It's a quote from the Buddha, who said, you don't learn from experience, but you learn from your capacity to experience. Now, John Kabat-Zinn said the same essential thing. He said, what is your capacity to be a holding space of peace in a world that's filled with chaos and fear? What is your capacity to be that still small voice when the world is screaming, oh my God, wear your mask, wash your hands, stay away from me, you might be contagious? Where is that spacious capacity to say, I'm not afraid? I am afraid, but I'm still going to go out and go shopping at Kroger's and wipe my cart down and smile at the lady. I noticed we were at Fresh Market the other day, and the checkout lady said, we can't pack your bags because we're being safe. So everybody has a different rule in the game. The rules of the game have changed. So I said, that's fine. And I packed my bag and we went home. So what is our capacity to adapt? What is our capacity to respond instead of react? I've noticed that when life gives you an ABGO, another blessed growth opportunity, like Glory G had on last Sunday night, I can either react and say, oh, it's horrible and it's, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, pull my hair out. Or I can respond, what can I do? How can I serve? How can I be that holding space like I was for Bert last night when the thunderstorms happen? So life will give us ample opportunities to learn to receive the grace of life and the capacity to do that. And ironically, it's these odd moments where we need that capacity more than ever. At least I do. The third week I spoke, this is a five Sunday month, the third week I spoke on the call of the soul. Now, remind you, I'm speaking on the mystery. And the mystery is something that we can't know. So, and the soul is something that most of us don't really know or even listen to, because the soul is the eternal part of ourselves. And I remember as a little boy growing up in the Orthodox Christian churches, the one phrase that seemed to resonate even as a little boy was when they said, what does it profit man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? Huh. So at a young age, I realized, hey, this thing called soul must be important. Later on, when I experienced so many deaths, especially during the AIDS crisis, I realized that I was there to minister to their soul because their human form was going to leave. Then they didn't have a cure for it. So for the first several years of the AIDS crisis, it was a terminal illness. So how can I help prepare them to make that shift into eternal life from this physical life? And so that's where the soul comes in. So the call of the soul is always speaking to us. And I can remember as even a new minister, I realized my job was to help midwife the soul in the individual, was to out your soul, your eternal self. And in a long-lived life, when you even with this possibility that death could happen to any one of us out there, it's more important than ever to hear the call of the soul, because it will remind you that you're not alone, that you're all right, and that no matter what happens, you will be fine, because you are this eternal life awakening in time and space. So the call of the soul is always speaking. Are we listening is the question. Last week I talked about the mystery of the moment, and I shared some Ajahshanti wisdom, who said the key to all spirituality in his mind is the immediacy of it. It's the moment. It's the power of the now. And how am I responding now to what is arising? And could I know that what is arising is there for me? And I don't have to fight with it. There is a painting in the back of the sanctuary that a young lady did. And it's called Step Off the Battlefield. And I said, why did you do that? And she says, because you say it all the time. I said, I do? And apparently I do, but I'm saying the same thing, I guess, right now. When we stop fighting with what is, and we open to it, then we can find the blessing in it. And so today I'm talking about life's lessons. Ah, beautiful Charles Oliver was supposed to speak this Sunday from Vallejo, Mississippi. And Charles in his 80s, and I said, Charles, I don't want you driving all the way over here to give a talk. We're trying to practice the safe distancing, and the event that I was doing was canceled. So I said, I'll schedule you at another time when things are safer. And he loves speaking about life's lessons. So I'm going to share what I sense maybe Charles might have said, but lessons. When I was a very young man in New York City, and the School of Life, which is the great school we're all in, I had a teacher once that said, you know, the outer teacher takes you to the inner teacher, but beyond all, the greatest teacher is life. And so I may be the outer teacher to you, pointing to your inner teacher within, but when you recognize life as the teacher, wow, then life gives us what we need, oftentimes not what we want. At least that was it was for me as a young man. I didn't want the relationship to end, it did. And when it ended, it took me to finding myself, not in the form outside of myself, but the form within. That was a life lesson. It was very uncomfortable. When I left the career that I thought I was supposed to pursue to make me a somebody, I fell into life that took me on a roller coaster ride, and my soul began to awaken, and I listened to the call of the soul, and then I found myself pursuing dance and creativity and landscaping, and ultimately, studying religious science when I was 30 years old, not realizing that the one thing I said I would never do was the thing I ended up doing as a calling for life, which is to serve the one through ministry. So I don't have a clue, you don't have a clue, but life does. And while I was a young man in New York City, I received a card from a friend in California, someone I'd met in Greece. And this young man, when I was really failing and falling, he gave me a little saying from Victor Hugo, which I took as a lifeline. And that little saying from Victor Hugo said, "Be like the bird who, pausing for a while on boughs too slight, feels them give way beneath her, yet sings knowing she hath wings." Well, I could relate. There's again another metaphor. Everything had fallen away that I'd identified with, and yet the bird could fly because she had wings. And I was in Corfu at the time. I didn't have any money. I had no direction. I had no idea where life was taking me, but I held on to that idea of the bird. So when I go to Manhattan and this young man moved back to San Francisco, he sent me a card. And on that card, there was another quote, which again worked its mystery on me. And that quote was from a man named Krishnamurti. I may be 21, 22 at the time. And it said, "In oneself lies the whole world. And if you know how to look and to learn," the key word is learn, "then the door is there and the key is in your hand. But no one gives you the key or the door to open except yourself." Well, I read that again and again and again and again. And what it seemed to point toward was I had to find the truth within myself. What life was showing me. I was beating myself up against these walls of disappointment and confusion because I had an idea of what I thought life should look like, and life was taking me in another direction. And so could I learn? Could I learn to open to the mystery of not knowing? Not finding safety or security or some kind of idea of myself that would make it acceptable and peaceful. And we're in times like that right now, where we don't know what's going to happen. And so I wrote down 10 little things that I thought would be helpful to you. The first one is life is the great teacher. I think I said that already. And so when we let life be the teacher, like life gave Gloria G a stroke last Sunday, life gave me a heart attack 2 years ago. Wow, what a teaching moment that was. Life gave my little dog Humphrey a herniated disc, and he was paralyzed. And he's coming back, and he's coming back as a different pug. It's amazing. So the teacher of life gives us these things, and it's not what happens to you, but what you do with what happens to you. I remember reading this thing about happiness. You won't be happy when you get what you want. You'll be happy when you want what you have. Huh. So it's not about getting happiness. It's about wanting what life gives you. You know, life gave me a pug that had a herniated disc who now can walk through surgery, and he gave me this huge gift of seeing my own vulnerability and my own courage to move through that. So that was life again, giving me another great blessing. The second idea about life's lessons is they're uniquely personal to you and nobody else. So what works for a Michael Short may not work for a David Leonard. And each of us gets to find out what works for me. I love it when people come through the receiving line on Sunday and they always want to give me their latest remedy, their latest book on vegan dining or whatever. And I think it's wonderful. I was a vegetarian for years, but now I eat mindfully and I'm pleased with that. I remember once I was having a cup of coffee and someone said, "That caffeine will kill you." And I said, "Well, with all due respect, I'm going to have the cup of coffee." So we have to be careful what we proselytize on others. My sister said, "Have I been saved?" one time. And I said, "You know, I know you've been saved. I don't need to be saved. Saved from what?" And then I tried to make a sense of humor about it. So find out personally what life is wanting to teach you if you know how to look and learn. The third one, I remember one of the most powerful moments growing up as a little boy was when I would watch The Wizard of Oz, which is this parable that we all live. It's the parable of the prodigal son. You know, you leave the father, you leave home, you find yourself, you're lost, you're confused, and then you have to find your way back home. It's the same story that's throughout mythology. So you have it in The Wizard of Oz. Dorothy leaves Kansas, goes to Oz, tries to get the witch's broomstick or whatever it is she's supposed to get so she can, the wizard can send her home. And after all her efforts, she's not going to go on the hot air balloon home, and Toto runs out and the balloon leaves and she's left. And you might think that was the end for poor Dorothy, but then Glinda comes down in a little white bubble, and she said, "What have you learned, Dorothy?" And Dorothy said, "Well, I learned to never look any further than my own backyard, because if it isn't there, I never really lost it to begin with. She said, that's it, that's it. And then Dorothy said, well, why didn't you tell me? She says, because you wouldn't have believed me if I had. You have to discover it for yourself. So it's unique to you, but you have to discover it. Instead of looking all over the world for the love of your life, what if the love is right there in your own heart? Instead of looking all over the world for validation, what if the validation is right there within you? Instead of looking all over the world for the right and perfect place for you to do whatever you do or for be whoever you are, where you are is the place to be who you are, right where you are. Wow, who would have thought? The third thing, and Jon Kabat-Zinn said this too, to all the different people who are wanting answers from him, people on the front line, parents wanting to know how to be with children, he says, trust in your own evolution of your own spiritual journey. You know, even the Bible says, when I was a child, I thought as a child. And then as we evolve, we begin to change. I used to be a religious scientist that was always into denying what I didn't want and affirming what I do. Now I realize that that just gave power to what I denied. So instead of denying it, I've evolved to that place where I invite it in. And what is fear trying to teach me? I'm curious. What is anxiety showing me about my reactiveness instead of my responsiveness? So in that third way, I trust in evolution. There was a sentence in the Science of Mind when I was teaching a Science of Mind 1 class that hit me over the head. That's life again. And the sentence was, he who does not trust does not know God. And in that moment, at time, I was really not trusting. It was during the AIDS crisis. We have this coronavirus right now. I wasn't trusting in this healing presence. A friend of mine said, you know, it looks like the planet is getting a reboot. Have you noticed in China, where they're not doing all their polluting, the air is clear now. So people aren't going to be dying from air pollution. The canals in Venice are clear now because they're not dumping everything in, and the dolphins are back. So what if the planet is really saying to us, enough of the abuse of the planet, the human species needs to awaken to its commitment to serve the planet, not just the human species. It's not about polluting anymore. So what if we could trust that something bigger is revealing itself? And it's our job to learn that. Jon Kabat-Zinn said, what if this coronavirus is a teacher for us? To learn how to be with one another. In the song that we played, I don't know whether you got to hear it, he's saying, one people on one planet, one family, a family of love. And he said, and if I build a wall, let me build it with bricks of peace, so that we can then build a wall of peace between each other. That's what the planet seems to be saying. Could we learn from one another during this time? Now, obviously, we didn't get a head start on the coronavirus. We didn't take heads up from China and from South Korea. So, but now we're doing it. We're shifting. We're self-isolating. We're being conscious about it. The fourth one is healing doesn't necessarily look the way you think it's supposed to look. Or life's lessons oftentimes aren't something where you think you arrive and now you have all the answers. I think the more that I know, really, the less I really do know. And I think, what is that wonderful thing from Socrates that said, the unexamined life isn't worth living? That was a Socrates statement. But then he also said, the one thing I know about life is that I don't know anything. Huh. Well, that's a different way of seeing life, isn't it? That learning isn't necessarily about amassing a great amount of knowledge, but in a strange sort of way to unlearn what we thought we knew so that we can discover something that is really relevant. As Jon Kabat-Zinn was speaking, he said, we don't know how powerful the silence that we have is. What if we could transmit not fear, but we could transmit a sense of wholeness, a sense of well-being? Just by being that, he told this mother who was concerned about her children, he says, you do know that the thing that you transmit to your children is not what you do, but who you are. And if you can transmit to them that you are peaceful and calm and have clarity and compassion, they'll receive that transmission. So it's not going to look the way you think, oh, you're safe now and you can go out and play and you don't have to be careful. No, I think we're going to have to be careful for a long time to be very conscious, mindfully conscious. So that's number four. The fifth one, learn from others. You know, Jon Kabat-Zinn said we should be learning from all these other countries the best practices. When I was a brand new minister in 1989, someone sent me a quote. And when the ones that really hit me, I put them on my wall and kind of embody them. But this quote was kind of a smack in the face, again, life. And the quote was from Admiral Rickover. And he says, "You don't have to make all the mistakes in life. You can learn from others." So when someone out there is making a mistake and you recognize it, don't emulate them. They're trying to show you what doesn't work. And so oftentimes what it is that chasing after a dream that's not going to happen, which is what I had a PhD in, that didn't work until I realized I don't have to chase after something. If it's right, it will naturally happen and it will just be there. So we can learn from others. The sixth thing about learning is to welcome what is. I shared with you last Sunday in my Mystery of the Moment that Matt Kahn has a wonderful little book that says, "Whatever arises, love that." So to embrace what arises, to welcome what is. And I mentioned that the Chinook Indians would say to whatever life brings you, "Teach me and show me the way." So could we at this time in this forced isolation say, "Teach me and show me how to be silent. Teach me and show me how to meet the fear when it arises and have the capacity to hold the fear, just like I did with Bert for an hour last night, and not freak out over the fear. Fear is going to arise. Anxiety is going to arise. Could I be a holding space and a welcoming place?" Last week, I was sharing you from True Meditation. This is the book that we're going to be using for the class. And at the very beginning, in the introduction, it says, "Life has a simple and fiercely kind invitation for us to be as we are in the face of what is." To be as we are. So in the face of what is, if fear arises, well, I'm afraid. If confusion rises, I'm confusion. And just like Ernest Holmes said, by a willingness to not run away from it or treat it away, but in a strange sort of way to welcome it in, then we become the welcoming space for the suffering on the planet. I'm getting texts now from some of you out there, and I just want you to know I don't have your answer. One young lady said, "There is so much suffering on the planet, it makes me sad." And I remember responding her, I said, "So could we take the suffering of the planet into our open heart?" The heart doesn't say I have to fix it. The head does. The head says I need to understand. What can I do? The heart says, "Can I just be a loving space when my dog is freaking out over a thunder and lightning storm? Can I know that that is enough? To be that calm, deep, loving space, to welcome the fear, to welcome his suffering, and knowing that as it is held for however long, it has a way of letting go." So she finally says this, "True meditation is virtually relational. It is an ultimate encounter with what is real, what is clear, and it is direct seeing truth in any form in our lives. And this clear seeing of what is present, be it an emotion, a thought, a misperception, a moment of joy, or the deepest essence of things, is a relational ultimate gesture. The moment itself contains within it the seeds of all that you need to meet that moment." But first we have to welcome the moment. We have to say yes to the moment. And then the moment can be a gift instead of a problem to be solved. So welcome the moment. That's number six. Number seven, and this came from Jon Kabat-Zinn. He talked about letting the five C's awaken within you. C's in Charlie. The first C is to know that you are consciousness itself. Last Sunday, I took you on a visualization at the end of the talk where I had you get in a hot air balloon, and the hot air balloon represented consciousness. And that hot air balloon can be weighed down when you identify with the bags that you hang on the side of it, the bags of your successes, your failures, your opinions, your belief system, your judgments, and it just weights the consciousness down. So in the willingness to just detach from fear for a very brief time, from all my achievements and specialness, let that go, from all my failures that have somehow made me a less than, let all that go. And the more we let go of, the lighter the consciousness becomes, and the more we're able to lift out of the condition and look upon it from the balcony. Ah, I can see clearly now. So that's consciousness, the first C. The second one is clarity. Again, once the consciousness gets light and it's not burdened down with so much of you and your furrowed brow and your concern, once that has let go a little bit, then you have clarity. I can see clearly now. The pain body is not running the show. Pain body has a PhD, and it loves your attention, because when you're in your pain body, oh my God, you feel things, you get validated by the outer world, you go to a support group, and you can let the whole world see your pain body, and then you're really special. But when you don't need it, you lighten the consciousness, you find clarity, I don't need to identify with that suffering anymore. There's a beautiful phrase I learned, which was like a lightning bolt, that all suffering is a resistance to what is. So when I stop resisting it, whatever it is, then there's clarity. I can use that as my second C. The third C is curiosity. Curiosity. In your meditations, can you be curious that, you know, oh, there's fear arising. Could I be curious what fear has to offer me? And maybe have a dialogue with fear. You know, fear, show me. Show me what I'm really afraid of. And oftentimes there'll be a little boy in me who has a fear. My little boy's afraid of heights. He's afraid of fast cars. And I realized, I'm curious, why am I afraid of this fast car speeding all around me? Because my father used to drive really fast and my mother was afraid. So in just inquiring into how did that fear get planted inside me, the curiosity showed me, ah, a lot of these things aren't even mine. They were transmitted from my parents and from my society. Wow. So then the confusion around that is lifted, and I have clarity. I can see clearly now. I don't need to go that route. The fourth C, he says, John Kabat-Zinn, and this is through mindfulness meditation. He says you'll find a calmness there. So when I shared with you last week when my little dog went out into the thunderstorm, and just like Bert, I think she lives in him. That's why he's so afraid of thunderstorms now. I needed to be a space of calmness for her and for him. I didn't need to try to shake him out of his fear. I needed to be the calm, still, small place. And it's funny, last week Ajashanti said at these turbulent times, here's a metaphor he used, our opportunity, our challenge, our responsibility is to move to the eye of the storm. The eye of the storm is calm. The circumference is all frenetic. But could we, just through a breath, reminding ourselves that the only time we ever experience is now, so in this now moment, in the middle of a thunderstorm with your dog shaking, could I move from the circumference of his shaking fear and step into that center of the cyclone and be that calm, loving space? That's the fourth C, calm. And then the last C, and John Kabat-Zinn said this is needed on the planet, and when we do recognize the suffering out there, could it awaken compassion in our hearts? You know, I heard people talking about in our prison systems, they don't have the capacity to isolate. They're all in a living quarters. So that's a hotbed for possibility of the coronavirus. The detention centers at the border with these young children kept in cages, are they working about keeping them safe and make sure that they have ventilators and that they have tests and all that? So could our compassion extend beyond just my small world of keeping me safe and my family to this world out there that is suffering? So allow those five C's to awaken in this classroom called life. That would be my number seven. Number eight, I shared with you earlier, is to create an island of decency. I've learned to create an island of decency for myself. I shared with you last week that in my backyard, a robin has made her nest in a very thorny bush, and she's laid her eggs. And it's right on the pathway, so if you walk past her pathway, she gets freaked out. On the front porch, I was incorrect. I thought the backyard got the mud from the front porch. No, another robin is nesting in the pot in the front porch, so I have to let the plants go and know that her little decency is having her babies on the front porch and one's in the back on the pathway. And it's all part of this shared experience. It's a relational thing. And I'm as responsible for their well-being as I am for my own. So there's a little different way of looking at life when you create an island of decency. Michael came in here wearing a mask because he's concerned about me catching a virus, you know, and I thought, what a beautiful statement on his behalf. The number nine one is to practice this true meditation. Now, whether you take the class or not, I'm not attached to it, and bear with us because it may be a little iffy at the beginning. Even watching with 22,000 people when they went to take phone calls, the Zoom didn't work, and it was so... On Wednesday morning, I'll have Jody's expertise there, but I'm a novice. But we'll do our very best. But this is what Jeff Foster, who wrote True Meditation, says. He says, the healing journey is not about getting rid of unwanted and negative material within us, purging it until we've reached a perfect and utopic healed state. No, that is the mind's version of what healing is. Healing is not a destination. True healing involves drenching the very same unwanted material within us with love, presence, and understanding. It involves penetrating our deepest shadows, our physical and emotional pains, those regions that we've withdrawn from in fear and in loathing, with a merciful and compassionate awareness. There's that C word again. To be compassionate with ourselves, re-inhabiting those disavowed, rejected, forgotten, and frightened regions within us, those abandoned realms of the body and the mind, with curious attention in the present moment, for what we attend to, we can love. So true meditation is not about running away from anything, but letting your meditation be your life, that life is the meditation. So one young man called from South America to talk to Jon Kabat-Zinn, and he says, can you give us, in his beautiful Latin way, can you give us some meditations to do that are helpful? And he said, once again, you have to discover how you meditate. He says, weeding the garden could be a form of meditation for you. He said, cooking can be a beautiful form of meditation with you. He said, if you go to the gym and you're walking on your treadmill, you can listen to a meditation tape and center into your body, and that could be a form of meditation. He says, doing yoga is a meditation. If you're not doing the asanas because you want to achieve a yogic state of something, but you're actually listening to your body and you're having a meditation with your spine and with your hips and with your shoulders. He says that's true meditation. Meditation just means looking with fresh eyes, being aware and awake to what is, and flushing our embodied experience with attention, attending to our experience. And this can only ever happen in the newness of the present moment. Again, the immediacy, the only time is now. So now, how are we? What is our capacity to respond? Could we fall in love with this peace that passes all understanding? And could we let it be our guiding light? Every moment in your life, there is always this wonderful possibility to slow down, to breathe deeply, to get curious about where you are, there's the C word again, and to begin again, to see life through new eyes, eyes that don't know, that don't have answers. We don't have answers right now. So looking through the eyes that don't know, we're in the mystery. But you know, life knows. I shared with you the only prayer that you'll ever need, and every time I think about it, it keeps working on me. And that is, dear mystery of life, dear universe, please assist me in assuming the consciousness that is necessary to meet these troubled times of coronavirus, of isolation. Could I let it all be a sacred opening for a discovery process, for this intimacy with the infinite, and also infinite intimacy with humanity? It was Ram Dass who said, you know, I thought the whole goal of spirituality is freedom, and that you would be free when you would leave the mortal coil, when you leave human and all of its suffering, and you'd go to the mountaintop, and you would have the awakened experience. And he says, but I was wrong. He says, freedom comes when you open to the full stickiness and pain of our human experience, and you don't push it away. Then you can be in the world, but not of it, and yet you're engaged in the world. You're not disengaged. You're engaged, but you're detached. So that's the opportunity for all of us. Last week I shared with you a beautiful saying from the end of a poem, and it said, it is very important now for those who are awake to stay awake, because these are very dark times. So could we stay awake and let the five C's begin to work on us, and paradoxically trust in this evolving experience that we're all sharing? We're all sharing this experience. You know, it's created an equanimity on the planet. This virus doesn't just go after one kind of people. It's global. The rich can't escape it, any less than the poor can escape it. And each one of us gets to observe how we are in this dance that we're doing with this thing. The last lesson that I found on my list of 10 is from a song by Karen Drucker, and I'm going to play it at the end. It's the song is To Be Gentle With Myself. The lyrics go, I will be gentle with myself. I will be gentle with myself, and I'll only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. Could we be gentle with ourselves when we're going through these times? And I'll only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. That is our challenge and opportunity, to not think that we are going to somehow be done by Easter Sunday and this will all be over and we can all go back to our ways. I think this has the potential to change us as a species, and wouldn't that be wonderful? See, my hope isn't, and Jon Kabat-Zinn said this too. He said, when you learn to access the deep within, there is this intuitive guidance system that you can trust. It's always been there. And my intuitive guidance system says, this is all happening for a reason, so that we can build walls of peace, not walls to separate us, so that we can be a global family in the one body of life. That includes the trees and the koalas and the polar bears in this one body of life, the penguins, the coral reefs. They're all in this one body of life. Jon Kabat-Zinn says, when you want to separate this one life, he says, think of your human body. Let's say you were enamored of your heart. Oh, this heart is so wonderful. It pumps blood everywhere. But then you have this liver with bile and all kinds of disgusting things, and the heart doesn't like the liver. Well, then you would be a house divided against itself, and you wouldn't be healthy. So could the heart love the liver, love the kidneys? Could we love the Chinese and the Koreans and even the Russians? Could we know that we're all part of the brotherhood of humanity? And in that, what we do to one, we do to ourselves. Jon Kabat-Zinn started his talk and ended his talk with a metaphor. It was the net of Indra. And it's from Hindu philosophy. And in this net of Indra, which holds the whole universe, there are these jewels spaced throughout it. And the jewels represent all of us and how each one of us reflects back that same presence to the other. And what we do to ourselves, what we do to the planet, we do to ourselves. So in that net of Indra, we're all interconnected. It's relationship. It's all relational. So life is teaching us that there's one people, one planet, one family, and we come together in that love. So I'm going to invite Michael to go put on Karen Drucker. Oh, and I want to thank those of you last week who sent in your tithes, your donations. I received some in the mail, 308 Lily Flag Road, and I've received several of you on PayPal. So thank you for helping support the center at this time. It means an awful lot.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You create a brand new